Okay, so find one. And look up 1 Samuel chapter 25. 1 Samuel 25, which is on page number 297. And just have them open somewhere so you can see them, because we're going to be working our way right through the whole chapter, bit by bit. 1 Samuel chapter 25, page number 297. Right, you all got it? Good. Now, a wee bit of introduction. Nikki was having a chat with someone on Ingress. I don't know what it is, the Ingress Forum or something like that. The Ingress Hangout. And he was going on and on and on about, what's it called, the Sunday service?
Sunday Assembly.
The Sunday Assembly. Hands up if you've heard of the Sunday Assembly. Yay! The Sunday Assembly is like a service, but without God. Okay? So the people who go along are people who want to... I'm not quite sure why they
church
go, actually.
The
they want to go to church, but not have church. It's all a bit strange. Yeah, that's right. And they sing songs, like they sing pop songs. And they chat to each other. But it raises an interesting question for us all, which is, being a Christian is knowing that because of Jesus we can have God in our lives. That's what being a Christian is. But what difference does that make? That's why Nikki at the beginning asked, why are you coming here tonight? Why can't we just go along to the Sunday Assembly? What difference does it mean having God in our lives? Or does it make any difference at all? Well, here's one way in which it can make a difference. And this is what we're going to focus on tonight. When people fall out, having God in our lives can make a difference. Hands up if you've ever fallen out with someone. Yeah, was it over something really big or was it something really little? It depends on your perspective. You know what I find is, whenever I've fallen out with someone, at the time it seems really big. But looking back, you wonder what all the fuss is about. Well, there's a few exceptions to that. But in general, it doesn't seem all that big with the gift of hindsight. Falling out with people usually involves two things. It involves a sense of injustice, like you've been wronged. And it involves an insult. If you add those two together, it's toxic. The Bible describes the tongue as being a bit like the spark that can light a forest fire. The book of James talks about it. Be careful how you use your tongue. It can be a bit like a spark that lights a forest fire. Another way of thinking of falling out is, someone does a bit of injustice to you, you expect them to say sorry, and they say, oh, it wasn't me, and all that, whatever it is. And then you say something to them, and they say something to you, and then the next thing you know, there's all sorts of strange things going on. It's a bit like a snowball rolling down a hill. Have you ever done a snowball and just watched it roll down a hill? It gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and there's nothing you can do to stop it. That's what falling out can be like. That's when the falling out is controlling you. You're not controlling it anymore. And you just don't know how to stop it. I don't know if you've ever been in a situation like that with anybody, past, present, where what started off with a sense of injustice, which wasn't all that significant, and then add a wee bit of insult to that, and then the next thing you know, insults are getting traded, and the snowball's gathering pace as it rolls down the hill, and it's controlling you. You're not controlling it anymore, and you don't know how to stop it. So can God make a difference with something like that? That's what tonight's reading's all about. It's about the story of David and, let's call him Nabal, okay? Because it sounds good, Nabal. I could call him Nabal. We're not quite sure how we call him, but we'll call him Nabal tonight. David and Nabal, and how what started off as a wee sense of injustice and a wee insult was in danger of going really ballistic. Except God didn't let that happen. And he got someone to intervene. So, does having God in our lives make a difference? Who's got reading number one? Thank you, Roger. 1 Samuel chapter 25, and he's going to read the first 8 verses. Off you go.
Now Samuel
Oh, hang on. What's the point of me getting this ready if I don't actually use it? Right, microphone number one, please. Thank you.
Now Samuel died, and all Israel assembled and mourned him. And they buried him at his home in Naram. Then David moved down into the desert of Moab. And a certain man in Moab who had property there at Carmel was very wealthy. He had 1,000 goats and 3,000 sheep, which he was shearing in Carmel. His name was Nabal, and his wife's name was Abigail. She was an intelligent and beautiful woman, but her husband, a Shilhite, was surly and mean in his dealings. While David was in the desert, he heard that Nabal was shearing sheep. So he sent 10 young men and said to them, "Go up to Nabal in Carmel and greet him in my name. Say to him, 'Long life to you, good health to you and your household, and good health to all that is yours. Now I hear that it is sheep shearing time. When your shepherds were with us, we did not ill-treat them, and the whole time they were at Carmel, nothing of theirs was missing. Ask your servants, and they will tell you. Therefore, be favorable towards my young men. Since we come at festival time, please give your servants and your son David whatever you can for them."
Thank you, Roger. Now, here's the wee injustice that this starts with. It's about to happen, but this is just setting the scene. David and his men, they're hiding from Saul, away down in the desert somewhere. They've just moved, and they moved to a place where this guy, Nabal, sends his shepherds with all his sheep. So while they're there, they sort of take on this sort of Robin Hood type of mentality. And, you know, they're there to defend the poor. So they defend the shepherds, and they keep them away from wild animals, and they keep them away from robbers. And the shepherds are very grateful to have them around. They're in a good relationship. But living in the desert is not fun. You don't get a shower. You don't get a cup of tea, because there's no tea. You know what I mean? Living in the desert can be quite hard. So when it comes to sheep shearing time, and all the shepherds start driving their sheep back up to Carmel, where they're going to shear the sheep, it's a bit like harvest time. They know that when they get there, there'll be all these shepherds coming in, all these sheep coming in, and there'll be a big party. It's sort of a time of reward for the shepherds for all the hard work they've doing. So they think, oh, maybe we could share in some of this, all the sort of civilized goods and all the stuff that will be around at the time, some dates, some figs, some wine, who knows. So David says to his men, off you go with them, and when you get there, just present yourself. You don't make a big fuss, just say, "Hello, Nabal, you see these sheep of yours? Well, the reason you got so many and your shepherds are not dead is because we were there looking after you. So if you can spare any of your delicacies, you know, it's quite difficult living out in the desert, just, you know, we're not saying we want it all, just a few to spare, and we'll take them back with us so that we can share in your festivities with David back out in the desert." Okay? That's the story so far. Who's got reading number two? Okay, hang on, here's the microphone coming.
When David's men arrived, they gave Nabal this message in David's name. Then they waited. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is the son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shearers and give it to men coming from who knows where?" David's men turned round and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word.
Keep going. Another verse. Verse 13.
David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords, and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the suppliers.
Okay. So you see what's happened there. They're going up expecting some sort of, they weren't expecting too much, but they're expecting some sort of acknowledgement of the fact that they've been there looking after Nabal's men. And instead of getting something, they get absolutely nothing. So there's a wee injustice there. And on top of that, they get an insult. That quip about, you know, where is it, verse Who is David? Who is the son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. You know, David used to be a servant of Saul, and Saul has gone against him, so David's had to run off. So basically Nabal's hinting that David's deliberately left his masters, that he's deliberately been disloyal. Basically, he doesn't have a good thing to think about, to say about David, and he makes sure he doesn't say anything nice about him at all. As a result, when the message get back to David, his men start putting on their swords. And 400 of them, head off to sort things out with Nabal. So what started with just a wee thing is getting bigger. The snowball's beginning to roll down the hill. Who's got the third reading? Third reading is about... Oh, hang on, just a few words of introduction before I say the third reading. Of course, what David's doing is not what God wants him to do. David has vengeance on his mind. This isn't what God wants. It's not good for David, it's not good for Nabal, it's not good for Nabal's camp. Because David has in mind not just to attack Nabal, he has in mind to attack them all. So God now steps in, and he steps in by sending a peacemaker. And the peacemaker is Nabal's wife, who's called Abigail. Right, who's got reading number three?
One of the servants told Nabal's wife Abigail, David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greetings, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not ill-treat us, and the whole time we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day, they were a wall around us all the time we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him. Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs of roast grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead, I will follow you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. As she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending towards her, and she met them. David had just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David with her face on the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "My lord, let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. May my lord pay no attention to that wicked man Nabal. He is just like his name. His name is Fool, and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my master sent. Now, since the Lord has kept you, my master, from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, as surely as the Lord lives and you live, and as you live, may your enemies and all who intend to harm my master be like Nabal. And let this gift which your servant has brought to my master be given to the men who follow you. Please forgive your servant's offense, for the Lord will certainly make a lasting dynasty for my master, because he fights the Lord's battles. Let no wrongdoing be found in you as long as you live. Even though someone is pursuing you to take your life, the life of my master will be bound securely in the bundle of the living by the Lord your God. But the lives of your enemies he will hurl away as from the pocket of a sling. When the Lord has done for my master every good thing he promised concerning him and has appointed him leader over Israel, my master will not have on his conscience the staggering burden of needless bloodshed or of having avenged himself. And when the Lord has brought my master success, remember your servant.
Do you notice the language that Abigail uses when she's talking to David? What does she call David? He calls David master. What does she call herself? Servant. If you're going to be a peacemaker, be polite. David knows that she's just being polite. I mean, he's not stupid. He's not her master as much as she's his servant. But she's putting herself in that role. Listen, you know, you're up there, we're down here. And she's doing it because she's a peacemaker. She's taking the first step. She's not saying, hey, David, see you messing with my husband. Sorry, I don't know where that came from. You know, she's going in deliberately knowing that this is a tense moment, and she's got to be the one who takes the first step. So right the way through it, she calls him my master. She says, I'm sorry. And she brings gifts. Do you notice the gifts? They're all the sorts of things you can't get in a desert. There's all these figs and all this flour and all these dates. You know, I can just feel my tummy rumbling at the thought. And she does two things. She, with the gifts, there's her old attitude, but with the gifts, she rights the injustice. David was expecting a wee thing from Nabal. Nabal had given him nothing. Abigail gives him lots, much more than David was expecting. So if you like, he rights the wrong, but doubly so. Or she rights the wrong, but doubly so. And also she apologizes. She says, it's my fault. She doesn't say it's Nabal's fault. She says, Nabal's an idiot. If I had only known that you were sending men, I would have made sure I stepped in. He's an idiot. Forget about him. It's my fault. This is my fault. She takes the blame. She takes the blame. Again, it's another important thing about peacemaking. Fallouts normally don't just happen with one side being in the wrong. And it's important, if you're in the role of peacemaker, to take responsibility for the bits that you could have done better, had you known, or even if you did know. And that's what she does. And what the result of this is that God is put back in control of the situation and back in control of David's life. David is about to do something awful, because things have got out of control. But because of the peacemaker coming in, because of the way she does it, she puts God back in control of her life, but also of David's life. Right, who's got reading number 4? Claire.
David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day and from avenging myself with my own hands. Otherwise, as surely as the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, who has kept me from harming you, if you had not come quickly to meet me, not one male belonging to Nabal would have been left alive by daybreak." Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought to him and said, "Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request."
You see David coming to his senses there. He suddenly realizes that Abigail has actually saved him from doing something or making things much worse. I've traveled in countries like Pakistan and Afghanistan where honor killings are just a way of life. And the reason they're a way of life is because there's no mechanism for stopping them. Usually it involves someone being a bit overzealous and romantic and running off with someone's wife. And the next thing you know, blood's being shed. And then for every life that's taken from one clan, two lives get taken from the next clan, and the next thing you know, it's being passed on from one generation to the next generation. David could have been involved in something like that. David was going to be the future king of Israel, and yet this could have stained that whole thing. What he did, not just to Nabal, but to Nabal's men, could have been a stain that just poisoned his whole kingship. And Abigail helps him to come to his senses and regain control of the situation. What Nabal did was rude and arrogant. You might say what Nabal did to David was sinful. But what David was planning to do in response was much, much more evil and much, much more sinful. And Abigail saves him from that. And there's a postscript, because the story's not finished. So who's got the final reading?
When Abigail went to Nabal, he was in the house holding a banquet like that of a king. He was in high spirits and very drunk, so she told him nothing until daybreak. Then in the morning, when Nabal was sober, his wife told him all these things, and his heart failed him, and he became like a stone. About 10 days later, the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. When David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Praise be to the Lord who has upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant from doing wrong and has brought Nabal's wrongdoing down on his own head." Then David sent word to Abigail, asking her to become his wife. His servants went to Carmel and said to Abigail, "David has sent us to you to take you to become his wife." She bowed down with her face to the ground and said, "Here is your maidservant, ready to serve you and wash the feet of my master's servants." Abigail quickly got on a donkey and, attended by her 5 maids, went with David's messengers and became his wife. David had also married Ahinoam of Jezreel, and they both were his wives. But Saul had given his daughter Michal, David's wife, to Paltiel, son of Laish, who was from Galim.
Thanks, Dougie. Now, I'm not going to get into the whole polygamy debate right now, okay? We've got plenty of time when we're looking at the life of David to see what a mess he got into, marrying too many women. But the interesting thing here is he lost Michal when he ran away from Saul, and now God's giving him a wife who is quite sharp-witted and quite sensible, too, a bit of a peacemaker. Now, what happened to Nabal at the end? Did he live happily ever after? He had a heart attack. He had probably a stroke. That's probably what happened. They say he became like a stone, and then he died 10 days later. Nabal wasn't a great guy. It was because of his stupidity and his arrogance and his greed that the whole thing could have just blown up in his face in the end. And it wouldn't have just been him who suffered. It would have been all his men and their families too. But what David has done through Abigail's intervention is he's given it all back to God. He said, "Right, fine, I'm just going to let this go now. God will sort it out." And of course, God does sort it out. Our God is a God of justice. He knows evil when he sees it. He knows when people are slighted or something wrong is done to them. He sees everything. There's nothing can be hidden from him. And he's basically saying, "No, hang on. It's not for you to get stuck in. You leave that to me." Jesus himself says, "Judge not, or you shall be judged." It's not our job to go around judging people. It's God's job to judge people. When we start judging people, we're acting like God. Another famous quote, God says, "Vengeance is mine." It's not our job to go around getting revenge. We can leave that with God as well. So that's the sort of postscript here. But going back to the peacemaking and the falling out, there's 3 questions I want us to think about. And I'll just give you a heads up now what's going to happen at the end, because we're not going to sing again. And instead, we're going to just play some music, and I'm going to encourage you, if you want to stay in the pews, to do so silently. If you want to have a chat at the end, then sort of that's the sort of chatting area over there. But the pews area is going to be the quiet God time area. And if, in particular, if you want someone to sit beside you and pray with you, then that's why you're sitting there. Okay, that's the signal. That's what it's all about. I'm just flagging this up now because At the end of services, we encourage people to have ministry time. We encourage people to go for prayer. But if there's a lot of chatting going on, then it's really quite distracting, particularly if it's just a couple of rows behind them. So at the end of this time together, we'll just keep this area here. I'll keep the candle lit, and we'll just keep this area as being God's space, okay? But if you want to do the chatting and catching up, if you just gravitate over there where you'll be served some delicious coffee by my lovely wife. I'm just giving you a heads up about that right now. The three questions. And those three questions revolve around the three people in that story. David, Nabal, and Abigail, okay? Are there situations where you've been like Nabal? When you've done something or said something, it might have been thoughtlessness, it might have been carelessness, it might have just been selfishness, whatever it is, whether realizing it at the time or not realizing it at the time, someone has ended up hurt. You see, if that's the case, then don't do what Nabal did. Sort it. Don't leave it. Sort it. And that might mean saying you're sorry. That might mean taking the first step. I'm not saying that's easy. But maybe that's what God's saying to you tonight. Here's another question. Are there situations where you've been like Abigail? Or where maybe you need to be like Abigail? You know of a falling out that's going on, and it's just getting worse and worse and worse. And you're just looking on in disbelief, saying, what's going on here? Now, if you know of a situation like that, maybe God's saying to you tonight, you've got to be the Abigail here. It's never easy being an Abigail, by the way. It's never easy. But Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons and daughters of God. So in the act of being the Abigail, you know what it feels like to have God as your father. There is blessing there, or you're going into a blessed place when you become a peacemaker. And then the final question, are there any situations where we've been like David? Where we've been hurt, and maybe the hurt is still there. And you know what it's like. You think you've put it in a cupboard, you've put it on file, you've shelved it, you've locked it away somewhere, and then the memory comes back and the hurt comes back with it. We'll just let the girl sit down. It's okay. Are there any situations where you've been like David? Maybe you've made things worse. Maybe you've responded to insult with insult. And that snowball has started to roll down the hill. And you don't know how to stop it. If that's the case, then just three words of advice. And then we're going to do an exercise. First word of advice is, first thing you do is take some of that to God. Because God already knows the whole situation. There's no point in hiding it from him. Take it to God. He understands. Ask him for help. The second thing, be ready to say sorry. Be ready to acknowledge any wrongs you've done in what's happening. Anything you've done to make things worse. And then the third thing, ask God to help you forgive them. Whatever it is, ask God to help you forgive them, because he will help you forgive them. Even when it's something you cannot do, he will give you the strength to do it. It will be God's forgiveness that you feel. I've been reading this book called The Grace Outpouring, and there's a passage in it. He's been talking to people, this guy who runs this retreat center, been talking to people who are struggling to deal with the abuse they've suffered in their lives. Now, that there are deep scars when people have to deal with abuse in their lives, particularly early on in their lives. But he says this, when we forgive those who have hurt us, we relinquish our right to vengeance. That's what we're doing. We're letting go of our right to vengeance. We're not saying that what they did doesn't matter anymore, and justice may still demand a response, but we're saying that it's now God's concern. It's not ours. I'll just read that again. When we forgive those who have hurt us, we relinquish our right to vengeance. We're not saying that what they did doesn't matter, and justice may still demand a response, but we're saying that we've given it to God now. It's now God's concern, not ours. Okay, now the exercise. You girls can join in with the exercise too, okay? Just from where you are. It's a close your eyes type exercise, okay? Here we go. I want you to imagine that you're sitting in a room, and it's the room where you feel safest. It may be your home, or it may be, I don't know, the place that you go to where your friends are, but it's the place where you feel safe and secure and relaxed. And imagine there's other people there as well. People you trust, people you can relax with. They may be friends, they may be family, people you work with. But there you are in that safe place, surrounded by safe people. And then imagine someone that you've been hurt by comes into the room. And this is real. I'm asking you to imagine someone you've been hurt by come into that room. What do you feel like when you see them come into the room? What are the feelings that you have? Okay, now someone else has come into the room. And you look up and you see that it's Jesus. Jesus has come into the room as well. And he looks up and he sees you. And Jesus, of course, knows what your feelings are. You can't hide anything from him. He knows what's on your heart. He knows what's going, the thoughts that are going through your mind. He sees to the core of your being. So all these things you've been thinking about this person who's hurt you, he sees them as well. How are you feeling now? And now, as you're watching Jesus, he turns away from looking at you and he sees the person who's hurt you. How do you think Jesus feels about them? Just in silence, I want you to ask Jesus to help you to feel the same way about them that he feels about them. Just ask him to help you. And now Jesus turns back to look at you. And it's like he wants you to say something. What are you going to say to him? Can we have the words of that prayer up, please, Derek? Let's say this prayer together. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. As I said, if you want to stay in the pews, that's fine. You can stay as long as you like. But please respect the others around you who do want to stay. If you want to chat, then there's going to be tea and coffee over there. Next Sunday, the speaker was going to be talking about human trafficking, but he can't come. We're trying to rearrange him to come another time. So next Sunday, we're going to be celebrating communion. And I'd love to hear some of your favorite communion stories. Of a favorite, you know, a favorite time when you celebrate, you know, a really meaningful time when you celebrated communion. So that'll be next Sunday. But for now, some music, please, Derek. For now, just let God work in you. Just stay as long as you like.